Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
Welcome to this panel on men leadership. So today I have the pleasure to receive Tom Harkin. Tom Harkin is one of Australia's preeminent advanced facilitators and executive coaches. He's the founder of Tomorrow Architects, and one of Tom's passion projects was the founding of Tomorrow Man, a social enterprise aimed at starting a conversation among men, both young and old, to reinvent masculinity by challenging traditional stereotypes and training emotional muscle. He has been featured on ABC's acclaimed documentary, Man Up. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
Then we have Eldred Jackson, third. He's the co-executive director of the Insight Circle, a public speaker on the topics of at-risk youth advocacy, effective criminal justice rehabilitation, and turning around toxic masculinity. He was an inmate at New Folsom Prison when he found Insight Circle and began the inner personal journey that eventually led to his release in 2014 and his current leadership role. Welcome, Eldra.
Thank you very much for having me, Stephanie.
Thank you. And last but not least, Rob Osman. So Rob is the founder of Dudes and Dogs, and Rob helps men to open up about mental health by taking them on a dog walk. He said dog walking has pulled him out of years of suffering with depression and now wants to share the space with other men who could also benefit. As he said, walking a dog is a conversation waiting to happen. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you.
So this panel, I think, has been the first panel I wanted to offer to the conference. And again, as I said yesterday when we talked with Eldra, I think I've seen the documentary, The Work, 5 times. I suddenly also saw the documentary Man Up with Tom. And I suddenly found Rob because they also did like a small documentary around his work. And I thought like, we have to put them together and see how many questions we have around men and emotional literacy and what you do also in different continents. So for everyone, Eldra is in the US, Rob is in the UK, and Tom in Australia. So I would like to see if there's any commonalities or if you have also some difference depending on the culture. So my first question is, what do you think what are the men issues at the moment and why we need to talk about emotional literacy or men issues right now? Who wants to start? I leave it open.
I can take it from an English perspective if you like in terms of that. First of all, is what's really refreshing is we're going to talk about these issues, and I'm sat with two gentlemen whose work embodies exactly what I think, certainly from my side, we're trying to change the perception of. And I can't speak on behalf of the other men, but I can certainly speak on behalf of myself and the men I've met on walks. And the simple thing is, for 38 years, I tried to fit into my perception of what I thought people wanted to see from me. I'm a pretty big guy. I play a lot of team sports, and I believe to be a leader as well, I had to be strong in everything and not show any weakness. And actually what I've started to realize is my basic understanding of strength and weakness was completely wrong. My strength is my emotions. That's where my strength is. It's my superpower, I call it now. But for 38 years, I hid it away because I felt it was my weakness. And I longed to be a leader and show leadership qualities. But the real truth is, that was all I did. I kept longing for it. And it wasn't until I started Something for Dudes and Dogs, with no intention of becoming any sort of, doing any sort of leadership or anything like that, that I felt I had that. For once, I'd found my calling and I'd found my purpose. And from being honest and being myself, rather than falling into stereotypes and pressures that men think they need to adhere to, I've been far happier and far more comfortable in my own skin since. And just because I enjoy rugby and those sorts of things, and it doesn't mean I can't cry at City Films. It doesn't mean that the water boy at the end is one of the moments that gets me crying in a film for no reason whatsoever. And I'm comfortable saying that now. Whereas a few years ago, that wouldn't have been something I would have said, certainly not in front of a panel of people.
Thank you. Anyone want to add something? Tom, maybe?
You're not alone on the water boy scene. I've definitely shed some tears to that one. I resonate a lot with what you said there, Rob. I think a lot of guys, I mean, talking from the Australian perspective, the stats are horrible. The leading cause of death amongst men 15 to 44 is themselves. Nothing kills more men in Australia than themselves in those age brackets. And that's just one of the stats, the stats around mental health and the amount of men that are in prison, violent crime, there's some horrific stats. But if I think that there's a tide turning, there's definitely... I feel like every day there's another organization that's popping out of the woodwork from men working with other men wanting to change things and wanting to provide more range. I think if you've only got one or two choices on emotion, then you don't have any choices. When you've got emotional range and you can go up and down and ride the waves of natural human emotion, then you've got choice, you've got flex. And for us, I guess Tomorrow Man, our biggest aim is to create training grounds wherever men will gather to reflect on the current state of manhood and ask ourselves the question, is it serving us? Are we getting the lives that are making us happy? Are we providing the life to our loved ones that we're happy with in terms of our relationship with them? And then a training ground to flex the emotional muscles that can help us, claim a larger life. And I think that awareness is shifting, but if you look at the way that a boy grows into a man in our country, there's not enough training grounds where they can actually see examples of men with a full range of emotion, see a man doing emotion, and also get on the tools and have the experience, have the space held well, so that they can experience the depths of their own emotions. They can shed tears in a group setting with their friends and realize that they haven't been ousted from the group, they haven't been rejected. And I think until we change those structures and, you talk about sport, sometimes in our workshops, at the end and in that documentary, Gus, who was the feature of the documentary, his son was in a workshop and a lot of the boys are emotional. 17-year-olds, there's about 30 of them in the room. Many of them were in tears, telling stories that they hadn't really told before. At the end of the workshop, Gus said, that was incredible. Like every kid in this country needs to go through that workshop. He said, but only once, you wouldn't want to do it too many times in a year. And I said, why is that? And he said, pretty intense. Yeah. Pretty fatiguing. And on the sport metaphor, Gussie's a big sport head. And I said, do you want Jack to be playing sport, training just once a year? And he said, no, don't be ridiculous. I said, well, Why do you want him to train more than once a year? And he said, well, he's got to build, you know, game fitness. He's got to build the muscle. And I said, well, you don't want him to train too hard, do you? You don't want him to train to the point where he's a bit exhausted, do you? And he's like, well, don't be ridiculous. Yeah, he's got to train to exhaustion. He's got to know his capacities. He's got to kind of build his physical resilience. And I was like, well, then why aren't we giving, you know, young men emotional training grounds where at times they do get a bit exhausted by the dumping of emotion and they feel what that's like and they understand the waves. Oh, okay, you dump the emotion, it feels a bit tiring, but it also feels kind of elating. And I said, did you see the boys walking out really heavy, sunken shoulders, heads down? He said, no, they were bouncing off the walls. And I said, so is it our perception or the reality, you know, that makes us think that we need to protect boys from emotion? So I'm big on the fact that we need to change the training grounds. In Australia, I do feel that there's a huge tipping point. Awareness has shifted and people want a different version of masculinity, but the structures haven't changed yet.
Thank you. Eldra, what is your take on
Well, it was so eloquently said by both of the previous gentlemen. What I would add is, you know, from my perspective and experience here, anger and humor are things that young men are encouraged to embrace and to share and to exhibit publicly. Anything outside of that is generally, you know, the message received is that it's weak, it's for women, it is, you know, frowned upon. And there's a wide range of emotions that contribute to the human condition. So, you know, if we are limiting, you know, our young men, our young boys to just two aspects, we're limiting their ability to be able to view themselves. And that informs the way that they look at others. That informs the way that they show up in the world. So if all I know is that it's okay to exhibit anger and that it's okay to, you know, be superficial with the jokey jokeys, hearty har har every now and again, but everything else, you know, is for women and girls and, you know, pussies and all that old sort of thing, then that's how I'm gonna show up in the world. And that's where we start to see, things that people label as toxic in relationship to masculinity. Masculinity is not toxic. What is toxic is limiting any human's ability to experience the full range of what is possible through the human condition. That's toxic.
Thank you.
Can I just comment on something Aldra said there as well? Because it was so on the money. We did this one walk where this guy came along for the first time. He was in his late 50s, dad was Jamaican, mum was a very strong practicing Catholic, and he didn't felt he belonged anywhere in his family. And he came on one of our walks and he was just sort of following at the back for a bit. Because we always say the whole thing is a walk and talk, but if you want to come and listen to how blokes talk, that's absolutely fine too, because for some people that's the starting point. And you could see the frustration in his body. And towards the end of the walk, I dropped back and I started strolling with him. And he got really angry and he got really upset. And he told me about his dad and his mum and his family. And he got so frustrated and angry. He was calling me names, basically, you know, while he was going through it. And then he started to cry when he started really talking about his dad. And he apologized for crying. He didn't once apologize for calling me names and getting angry, not once. Mm-hmm. Now that doesn't bother me in the slightest. But those two emotions, I think what Eldra explained really well is about those two emotions that dominate masculinity. Those two things, anger and sadness and the feelings we get, they're the same things. They're overwhelming emotions and we've got to learn to embrace and control them in the same way. And what Eldra said was on the money and that guy epitomized it at that moment. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. One thing I would like to approach is something I've heard in Eldra's story, for instance, in your TED talk, and I've heard like in other people's story, is the burden of responsibility in men. Can we talk a little bit about that? That's the weight of responsibility that can maybe have an impact on also emotional literacy. Want to start there?
Yeah. Most definitely. You know, again, I always like to speak from the I perspective and not, you know, take on the responsibility or burden of carrying all manhood for every man on the face of the planet. Messages that I personally received growing up was, I had a younger sister, and the messages that I received, you know, was that it was my responsibility to look out for my younger sister. I was responsible for her safety. I was responsible for her security. I was, you know, if my parents weren't around, I was in charge. I was 5, 6, 7 years old. I was not mentally or emotionally equipped to care and be in and have the charge for another human being. And unfortunately, that put me in a situation with a babysitter, you know, when I was 7, 8 years old, where my little sister was threatened with being violated. And to protect her, I put myself in harm's way. And then that informed me at 7 years old, that informed what caring about my sister meant. That informed with having a heart and loving someone meant to me. That put me in danger's way. That put me in a position to be harmed. And that informed how I lived the lion's share of my life because of messages that I received when I was 4, 5, 6 years old about what it meant to, you know, buck up and tighten up and put your big boy drawers on and take care of those around you. I wasn't equipped for that. That's just how it showed up, you know, in my life.
Anyone else? Maybe Tom. I wouldn't like ask you to answer with an I, but I know in Australia there's a big burden also with men. Maybe it can be anything, like having difficulty financially or anything, and not being able to share, and having other weights.
Definitely. I think it's important to acknowledge that both genders carry their burdens, you know. So, you know, the messages that we send in the binary gendered lenses, you know, they're different, but they're equally weighted, you know, whether it's the mental load of women or it's the burden of responsibility of men to be the earner, to be the solid man, to be the rock. And I think it's interesting because, you know, from a societal perspective, particularly in Australia, we're starting to loosen those ideals. And so people are talking, you know, men don't just need to be the strength, and people are often calling on men, you know, it's okay to talk about your feelings, and we want you to talk about your feelings. Unfortunately, we work with men at all ages, and the lion's share of the work we do is the preventative stages around teenage years, because we talk to the boys as adults. So we work from 16 up. We don't want to hold any content back from them or not talk about any, you know, particular topic. But at the older age brackets, often those men have created relationships around them based on a contract of old school masculinity. And so what they'll sometimes say is, yeah, it's all good for me to kind of sit here and exercise this emotion and have these guys accept me for it. But I can tell you, when I go home, my wife's only happy with so many of my tears, once or twice maybe. But the contract that we've got is she really wants me to be the strength, and my boys. And so it's rewriting all these contracts, you know. I might be expressing my range better, but what contract have I written with all of the people that have signed up to relationships in my life? And we need to renegotiate all of those. They need to grow and I need to grow. And they need to redefine their version of what they might need from me or think of me. At younger ages, that's easier because there's less contracts that are written. You've got the one with your parents that most teenagers are already trying to rip up. But you don't have these other defined kind of contracts with people. So you've still got this time to be able to express your range before you're set in stone. So I think, you know, those messages are so powerful. As an example, when after Man Up, there's a station called Triple M in Australia, and it's the radio station that talks to the most mainstream men across Australia, the most men. It's like the man's station, rock and sport and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they wanted to do a survey because they realized that their male audience wanted to hear about different things. And so they did this big survey. As a part of it, we did this tour around to talk about the changing face of masculinity in Australia. and they made a little video. And they made a video with inner city kind of, you know, left-leaning families, like you might say, you know, like kind of latte drinking, open-minded inner city kids, you know, of the radio station's kids, like the people working at the radio station. They were asked, like, what is a man? And what do you think they said? Oh, big, strong, doesn't cry, tough, all of those kind of things. And so this is almost 2020 and all these kids are saying these things. And so at the adult ages, we think things are changing. But if the young kids are still saying those things, my dad doesn't cry. I've only seen him cry when he cuts the onions or he gets hurt really badly. You know, men are big and strong and they take responsibility. They take the lead and dad goes out and he works more than mum and he earns more money and all of those kind of things. Like they're incredibly pervasive ideas. And they're not bad. I think that's really important to be very clear that they're not bad. It's good to be stoic. It's good to be strong and to have that capacity. But you also want the capacity to realize when today's not a day to be stoic and there's no threats in my presence. Today's actually a day to release the, you know, put down the weapons, put down the armory, you know, the emotional armory and release so that I'm ready to sustainably go back into the next day where I might need to have stoic resilience, because life is still challenging the next day, but to have that flex. And so I think there's burdens on both sides. And I think we have a lot of renegotiating to do as a society.
Thank you. Rob?
Yeah, I think that I'd be echoing a lot of stuff. So what I would say is again, from I'm still discovering, I guess, how many of these interpretations I've put on myself rather than being put on me as well, in terms of, yes, there's been my upbringing that's contributed to it. And you said about the vision of your dad never crying. Now, my dad died in 2009, and it turns out my dad was a super emotional guy, which pretty much everyone in my family knew but me. And my memory of my dad is he was nailing on the fence and he put a nail through his thumb and he didn't cry, he just took it out. I was like, wow. But then he went to see Les Mis in the theatre and it made him cry. And I couldn't put the two together. I couldn't balance the two. And it's about not falling into those traps that I fell into and as a result burdened myself with. And I still find myself doing it occasionally. You know, I said to my son a while back about, I was going away with work. So you're the man of the house now. And then I think about what that means now. And actually, it meant very little, because my partner at the time, she was the one that ran the house. She sorted the bills. She did all that stuff. And she was the one running the house. So being the man of the house, what did that actually mean? It meant very little when you actually analyze the words like that. Mm.
Thank you. I would like to go back to what Tom mentioned about renegotiate the contracts. And I remember some time ago hearing a book from Brené Brown, which is actually around men and women. What is your opinion that around what women could do to help men's emotional literacy? Because as you said, you know, like there's been some contract, and sometimes women, it's really easy for women to say, okay, it's men's fault because, I don't know, because it's not like emotional or it doesn't open up. But we have a part there. So what is your take on that? What do you think women in general could do to help men to open up?
I'm happy to start on that. I think the first thing is, I think the first thing is to have a self-awareness around their own internalized expectations of men. And so as an example, talking about that, you know, 50-year-old guy who's going like, hey, I'm trying to express my emotion. I'm falling apart a bit at home at the moment. My wife can't handle it. She wants me to be strong. She's telling me to be strong. And so I think some awareness around, you know, in that moment, if she's able to say, hey, I'm feeling uncomfortable. You know, I'm feeling uncomfortable. I want to be here to hold this new version of you or this side of you, but it's making me uncomfortable because I've got all sorts of messages going through my head on what I think I need from you. And the fact that I think I need you to be the strength. Because if you're not the strength, then we're all in trouble. If you're not pulling the nail out of your hand without tears, then we're all in trouble type thing. And so I do think that it's on both sides. You know, I think that women are often trying to create space for men to access their emotion and asking for it and calling for it. I think, you know, in the same way that men need to play a role in pulling down some of the structures that limit women, women need to play a role in pulling down some of the structures that continue to perpetuate messages about men only being strong and only being tough, and not being emotional beings. And I also think it's not exactly the question you asked me, but I think men have a huge role to play here, like a much bigger role than women in many respects. For young men, you know, say my, I like to think that River, you know, I'm his hero and he looks up to me and he loves his dad and he's 4 years old. But when he sees his cousin, if there's anybody within a year or two of his age, but a bit older than him in earshot or around, I'm irrelevant. Like they are everything to him. They're his heroes. And so I think as boys, we grow up looking up, you know, and we grow up admiring the men, you know, ahead of us. Even if it frustrates us and we end up feeling angry and resentful at them, still secretly, we want them to see us. We want them, you know, to value us. And so I think if as men, we're giving each other more and more examples of range, and we're breaking down old ideals about masculinity, I think that has a lot of power. And talking about our relationships. How are you in your relationship? How are you renegotiating this contract? What are the conversations that you're having with you know, the people in your family about, you know, shifting the way that you express your masculinity?
Thank you. Rob?
Yeah, I think what's really interesting in the moment is for both sexes, it is just generally, there's so much change and it's so confusing as to what's what. And we've got to get away from thinking this is masculine and this is feminine, this is a man, this is a woman. Because if you're going to stereotype emotions, I fall into the female stereotype. There's no doubt about it. I do. And I'm quite comfortable with that now. But the thing that I've noticed most since starting Dudes and Dogs is that it's more women that reach out for their brothers, their friends, for their boyfriends, for their wives, than it is men reaching out for themselves. And that seems to me what women can do at the moment, is keep giving men that nudge, the men that do stay stoic all the time and don't ever let those barriers down. Keep giving that nudge, keep reaching out, because it might be the one time it helps.
Thank you. Eldra, you have any?
What I would add is something around expectations and being supportive doesn't necessarily have expectations attached to it, especially if we're talking about, you know, supporting men in learning how to do something different and show up in a different way. And then we shame them because it doesn't look like we think that it's supposed to look like when they make their attempts or when they step into that space. Because there was a time when I was a person that, you know, if I stepped out on that ledge and I receive some sort of a critical feedback based on my performance, then I'm not doing that again. Why should I? Why should I put myself out there like that? As opposed to being with individuals where they are and being supportive of them where they are and being nurturing and loving and kind as someone moves along the line attempting to get someplace else. So I think that there's a great room there to look at expectations and support and the challenge, you know, if we're talking about women, challenge your own expectations about what men are. Because if you say in one breath that, you know, I expect men or I would like men to be more open and to be more loving and to show more emotions, and then in the very next breath, you're telling your son to stop crying because it's getting on your nerves. Where are we at with that?
Thank you. My next question would be around having a safe space for men to talk. Because again, as a woman, I know that, you know, we'll always find a place between women to have people, the ability to chat and to have conversation. And And I've seen that sometimes when we try to do this with men, it's a bit hard. You know, you're not going to bring a man in a tea shop or, you know, to have this kind of conversation. And that's why, just to let you know, Matteo Brown, so Matt Brown was in New Zealand, was supposed to come to this panel. Unfortunately, for a personal reason, it cannot come. But I found this idea, he's a barbershop. He has a barbershop, he's a barber in the New Zealand, and he found that it was a safe place for men to be able to talk. So what is your take on what's the best place or how, what can we do with men to offer them a safe space to talk?
I think this is the nail on the head moment for me, and this is what really matters is engaging with men in the right way, and that not necessarily isn't going down the pub every time, and that comes from someone who loves going down the pub and having a beer, but it's about understanding the pub can sometimes be a space where emotions can get a bit heated as well. But someone put in the comments, Andrea said about sitting side by side rather than across from them, and I think that for me is one of the key messages. When I started Dudes and Dogs, I was saying to people to come out, let's go for a walk. And that is so much easier than saying, come on, mate, let's sit down and have a chat. And when you're walking and you're throwing a ball for the dog, or you're enjoying nature around you, or dogs are doing stupid things as they do, it means you lose that eye contact sometimes, which some men find so difficult. And by changing the space, by changing the environment and putting men into an environment which is more comfortable to them, you allow them that space to speak. And I'm a strong believer that getting out side by side with another man and just shooting the breeze, and if that's how it stays, that's absolutely fine. But generally, by being out and being in that different environment, by changing the mood, by changing the world around you, it allows you to change your mindset and open up more to talking about these things. And as I say, we have guys that come on our walks who'd never consider talking and sitting down with people, not once, but they'll come on these walks and they'll open up and talk about their difficulties and how they're feeling.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to jump?
I found that it comes from modeling. Safe space comes from modeling, and it can happen anywhere. It could just be me and another individual engaged in a one-on-one conversation, or it could be me and a group of individuals. And, you know, there could be something going on where you have the usual banal, you know, guy talk going on. All it takes is for one individual to challenge that, and it can change the entire course of that conversation. It you know, I've seen it time and time again, and I'll make the reference to a maximum security prison, what it looks like when one or a handful of individuals decide to change the course of the conversation and begin to question why it is that we are collectively thinking the way that we're thinking and acting the way that we are acting. I've been in an environment where for an entire decade, there was no violence across racial lines because people started to think differently and started to challenge the status quo as far as thinking is concerned. So a safe space can be just as simple as one man, one individual standing up and beginning that conversation, because it gives everyone else permission to do the same.
Very well said.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love that. I love both of those points. I think we're on a journey, and it relates a little bit to the last question, because sometimes that question asked differently is, how can women have the actual conversation? What are tips for the actual conversation? And often the tips are, you know, not acting like you care too much, not prying too much, not asking too many questions, providing space. And sometimes I feel like that's because we're at a fragile state, an early state in men getting to a full expression of their emotion in terms of, across the board for men. And so I think, you know, the entry point for us at the moment is finding ways to sneak up in a way, you know, finding ways to make things comfortable. And that can be, you know, walking side by side. You know, if you think about the activities that men often do together, very few of them engage, you know, sitting face to face. If you look around your average primary school or high school in Australia, you'll often find the girls sitting in circles and facing towards each other and learning how to dialogue together. You won't find the guys doing that so much. They'll generally be sitting side by side along a, you know, along a plank of wood or a fence, or competing in a game or doing an activity, something that takes their focus away from direct face-on-face dialogue with each other. And so again, we've got to ask, all right, well, do those patterns perpetuate, you know? When a man breaks up, you know, a significant romantic relationship, does he fall back into a circle of friends that hold him and allow for his emotion to unfold? Or do his friends feel that the pattern that they've learned from primary school onwards is, let's get away from this. Let's find a focus that distracts us. Let's go and watch the football or drink a beer or do something that takes you away from pain rather than into pain, so that you can grieve it and you can move to the next stage. And so I think there's the aspiration and then there's where we are today. And I really feel like the aspiration needs to be that from a young age, we give boys the tools and the emotional muscle to learn how to sit in front of each other so they can go for a coffee and just talk it out. And that is seen as a normal thing for guys to do, you know, as normal as, you know, going fishing or going for a kick of the football or going to watch the sport or, you know, going to the pub and sitting side by side. But I do think that men won't be able to sit face to face and engage in emotion, as Eldra said, until it's modeled for them, until they see it normalized and until they have practice with it. And so where we are at the moment is, I think that at times we need to find ways to be able to look after the emotional state of a man, to be able to provide conditions where it'll peep out and realize it's safe and then go, oh, it's not so bad out here. Okay, maybe, you know, I can feel stronger in this. And then we start to really feel empowered with our emotional life. But what if we started earlier? What if we never got to the point where a guy felt, you know, I don't know where to put my emotional life. I don't know how to talk to my friends face to face and sit with our emotion, just hold space for it together, the way often women are normalized and encouraged to do.
Yeah. Eldra, I just wanted to ask you the question because it has been raised in the Q&A. I know your work is a bit different because you work in prison, and someone was asking if you can tell a little bit more what you do, because maybe a prisoner cannot go outside and have a walk, that like same as Rob or Tom would do.
What we found to work in the space that was created inside, that's now known as Inside Circle, is creating that space, that safe space, with some agreements with people who sit in that circle. And the very first and paramount important agreement is anonymity. And what's said in that circle stays in that circle, so that people know that they can be open and begin to learn what safety looks and feels like, so they can start to tap into and open up to a place of vulnerability. Because oftentimes men don't have, or males don't have places that they feel safe to be open and to be vulnerable. Again, oftentimes the message is that being vulnerable is something that puts you in position to be victimized, as opposed to being vulnerable is something that puts me in a position to be open and to be more loving and to be more welcoming and to be in greater relation with others. So what we learned how to do in prison was, number one, create the safe space with anonymity, create the safe space with the promise not to do violence to one another, with the intention to speak truthful and to be honest and to know that you have the right to pass. You don't have to engage or indulge in anything that you don't want to, and you won't be ridiculed for it. That's a sign of strength. That's a sign of self-awareness, knowing your boundaries and knowing, yeah, I can't go there. I'm not comfortable. I'm not ready for that. That's a huge sign of emotional maturity. So those are some of the things that we learned how to use inside prison and begin to sit and share our stories and find out, you know, where do you hurt? Where do you have joy in your life? Where do you have pain in your life? Where do you have sadness in your life? And have you ever had the opportunity to just sit with that and feel that?
Aldra, can I ask on that as well? Because obviously you're dealing with some pretty big bad dudes at times in there as well, I imagine. And people who letting their guard down and letting that front down, it loses status as well. What did you find that was your biggest barrier when you started in, within prisons? Is people not wanting to lose face and lose that status almost?
Not so much inside of the circle, because everyone inside of the circle was pretty much on the same on the same page. The biggest barrier was trust. Most men who I have sat with in those circles, to a man, the biggest factor that they have to overcome is trust and opening up to someone. Because oftentimes in our lives, there was a point where we were open and there was a point where we trusted someone and we got hurt. And we weren't equipped with how to deal with that hurt. We weren't equipped with how to face it. We weren't equipped with how to heal from that. So what we do is we shut down. I'm gonna shut down, I'm gonna close this up, I'm gonna box that away, and this is never ever gonna happen again. That's what, as males, we know how to do.
Thank you. Actually, there's a question from Andra. I would say, how long did it take to gain trust?
Well, to an individual, it's different for every individual. It might take me, you know, a day. It might take someone else a year. And there are varying degrees and levels of trust. I might trust you with my wallet, but I don't trust you with my wife. So again, it's about knowing myself and being able to learn what my boundaries are and learn, you know, what works and what doesn't. That's an ongoing process. Trust is not something that's just given and it's just carte blanche and a one size fits all thing. It's situational.
Thank you. I have a question, you know, since we're in the embodiment conference and also because I work with men as coach and it's something I've seen and we used to talk about it in is when we go back to the body, with men and we work, you know, in emotions, we're told not to ask, what do you feel or where do you feel it? Because feeling is, a lot of men say like, I don't know. They kind of cut and they don't know where they feel these emotions. And the word feeling is hard to get. So we usually say like, where do you notice tension? But I notice a lot of, men not being able to even to notice their body when they have emotions. What is your take on that? And what do you think we can do around this work of connecting mind body together?
I would encourage to continue to ask men what they feel and where they feel it and keep asking until they can get into that space. It's been talked about here before about exercising that muscle and not only keeping continue to ask about where you feel it, but encourage them to identify an emotion. Not, you know, something that's very vague. Oh, I feel disrespected or oh, I feel annoyed. OK, well, when you're annoyed, what's going on with you? What are you feeling when you feel annoyed? How do you show up when you're annoyed? And keep hammering and keep drilling down until we get to that point where I can say, I'm pissed the fuck off when I'm annoyed. Oh, okay, so I hear anger there. And encourage men to begin to start to name what those emotions are as in versus those peripheral things that feel safe to say. You know, it oftentimes I might start off talking about I'm angry, but if you keep questioning me and facilitating me around it, we'll get down to a space to, you know, the truth is I feel sad. And I'm using anger to cover up the sadness because the anger is safe. The anger is macho. The anger projects strength. The anger lets you know, don't mess with me. But if you see that I'm sad, I might, you know, come across as vulnerable or weak or something like that. So it's about creating the space so that, you know, people feel safe expressing the full range of emotions.
Thank you.
I think the key point of what Al just said there as well is about helping men identify what might be new emotions to them. I was unfortunate having sort of two sisters in my life. I've probably identified those emotions earlier. But for some men, they probably never, you know, Eldra said that anger is reflecting the sadness. And once you get down and dig down to it and say it's okay to be upset, reaffirm it. You know, the biggest learning I've had from this is to empathize with people. If you can empathize with people, it's a hugely powerful tool. I, that's a very quick story. I broke my back when I was younger. I went to the doctors. They filled me with meds. They just kept on meds. I went to see this acupuncturist. And the first thing he did was he listened to me and he turned around and he said, geez, that must have been tough. And he had my trust because he empathized and he listened. And that's where I think it's really important to help men identify these new emotions, is to empathize, identify how they're feeling and let them know it's okay.
Yeah. Ditto. I completely agree. I think that those two things that Eldra and Rob have both called out are the two sides we need to come at it. You know, yes, getting the emotional literacy up of men, and just, you know, you're not empowered until you understand, you know, your internal life. But also the acceptance, you know, and feeling safe, because sometimes a man will know what he's feeling, but he won't want to say it because they're worried about judgment. And so sometimes you're battling an ignorance and a lack of knowledge. I just don't know, genuinely. And sometimes you're battling, I know, but I don't want to say this out loud. You know, I actually don't want to say what I'm feeling because I think I'm going to be judged. We were down the surf coast running a session. I remember this guy, I'll never forget it. He was talking about how a friend of his had taken his life and he fell into a real depression. He said, I just went into a funk over months and I couldn't get myself out of it. And he said he got to a point where he was having suicidal ideation. He didn't tell anybody. Nobody knew that he was struggling. You know, he was starting to get into, you know, further down the hole of substance abuse and he was having this continual ideation and starting to plan stuff. And then he went out for a surf and he got smashed by a wave against the reef and he broke his leg. And he said, it was incredible because I snapped my leg and his family, basically he was incapacitated. His parents had to take him in. They had to look after him, you know, feed him, you know, create a bed for him, all these things. And he's like, that's what I needed. That was the care that I needed, but I wasn't willing to accept it. I had to break my bones, you know, like I broke my bones. It was I can't control it. It was a surfing accident, but I had broken bones all through my emotional life and I wasn't willing to ask for it or realizing that that was accessible, that somebody would take me in, that they would look after me in that way. And I think that for a lot of men, you know, we get physical pain. Oh, okay, physical pain, but emotional pain, we've got a doubt about whether people are going to come to the rescue on that. And sometimes, as Eldra said, we're valid in that doubt. And I think that last point that you made to the last question, Eldra, was really powerful in that as young people, we're not discerning about the rules that we create about life. And so if we feel that life is unsafe, we build barriers, you know, and we create weapons and we're not discerning. We don't realize safe moment, unsafe moment. We're not skilled and tooled and equipped yet to be able to de-armor and armor. And I think it's really important that we're not naive about helping a young boy or a man on this journey of saying, open-hearted always, always vulnerable, because some of these young men live in war zones, you know, at home. And so they do need to armor. But then it's so important that they don't become defined by the armor. And so I do think so much of it is about, as Eldra said, safe spaces where you get to exercise. Okay, I know what a safe space looks like, feels like, and I know how to then understand my emotion and go there with choice when I'm ready to. And so it's this out and in. And I think that builds the confidence. Oh, I know how to handle, you know, a variety of circumstances rather than a more, you know, simple version of the world. It's unsafe and so I'm locked up all the time, or it's safe and so I'm open all the time. It's not that simple.
Thank you. I have two questions. I'm going to put them together so you have the choice to respond the one you would like. I've seen many times two responses to from men when as helper or trying to help, you say maybe you need to go to a therapist or, you know, to ask for help. First thing is, I'm not crazy. And the second thing is, maybe it's too late. I'm a desperate case. So what would be your suggestion for, I'm not going to say only women, but people around men who have difficulties to go and ask for help when you've got those two answers or any of those two?
That's a huge question. And there is no straight answer to it. And it's what I guess we're all trying to work out still at the moment. And it's kind of what we've covered off as we've spoken. It is about finding what's right for the individual. It's known that, yeah, men do fall into the same stereotypes an awful lot, but men also need to be spoken to differently. We have a military branch, Dudes and Dogs, for former servicemen. And there's walks set up that guys can come on, but we also know there's a large portion of those guys who won't ever come on a walk and talk. They just won't, because that's so ingrained with them. You know, not only was it ingrained through their childhood, it was ingrained through what they did in their life. They served and they protected. And that is what has been their entire life. So how do you take someone in their 40s, 50s, however old, and convince them to forget everything they've learned for that period of time? And actually it is okay to show that vulnerability. And the fact is, coming on a walk and having a talk probably isn't going to do it for them. So you've got to look at other ways to support them. You've got to put other things in place to give them that support. As an example, with our military guys, we've got an app which is coming out on the 28th, and it's an instant, it's called Man Down UK. And what they can do is hit a button and they get instant access to every level of support, from crisis to a Zoom call to signing up for a walk. And that's what you need to put in place. I can't speak for the other countries, but over here, the time you have to wait, once a bloke like that gets the courage up, he's reached bottom, and instead of killing himself, which men are very good at, he decides to go off and go to the GP. And then the GP tells him he's got to wait 3, 4, 5, 6 months to get treatment. Do you think that guy's going to wait that time? Absolutely not. He's going to forget, screw this, he's out, he's done. And it's giving those guys instant access to that support. What the answer is to your question, I don't know, but I think being able to give men that instant access and different level of support when they need it, not when the service system can provide it.
Thank you.
I would follow that up with saying that I don't have that answer either, because each individual is different and an entity unto themselves. I would go back to what I said previously about being willing to support and meet people where they are. That's the best I can give you, is being willing and having the systems and the people set in place so that wherever an individual is, something, someone, some organization, some group, somebody is there to meet them where they are and has the compassion to sit with them in that space. No judgment, no expectations, just meet them exactly where they are so that they know that they're not in this alone.
I think that the I'm not crazy comment often comes because help seeking is stigmatized, and particularly going to see a counselor or a psychologist or, you know, whatever that might be, it means I've got a problem. And I think we need to destigmatize those avenues. And so, you know, for myself, if I'm talking to a guy and I'm recommending or referring him to a counselor or see a psychologist, I'll often just try and, you know, deconstruct the idea of a counselor. Well, what are they? You know, sometimes you can't talk to your mates because they're not quite ready yet, and they'll try and like tap you on the shoulder or make a joke or take you away from it, or they might start talking about themselves, you know, unintentionally. Sometimes your partner's too close to it, so it's a little bit too sensitive to begin with them because it might get volatile. There's so much emotion in it, you know, it's just too hot. And so I'd say what this person is, you pay them a few bucks, and they're forced to sit there and they're just a receptacle for you just to dump all your stuff. Like that's what they are. And so it's like, you know, it's amazing to have 1 hour of somebody that's purely there just for you to offload. You know, they're paid to not throw in their, you know, their half of the story. And they're equipped not to distract you from it or laugh you away from it or to not be able to handle it. And so why wouldn't you? You know what I mean? Now, sometimes there are other things that stop that, financial circumstances, and maybe the government doesn't help as much as it could and things like that. But that's one. The other one is, in Australia, this is very anecdotal, but it feels like guys have to go and see about 4 counselors before they find one that they feel that they can genuinely get a connection with and not feel like a problem and not feel like they're being judged or picked at or seen as an inhumane problem. They want a connection. You know, I don't want a sterile environment. I want a connection and I want to be understood. And so the other piece of advice that I always give is spread the network. Like I love that idea for that app, but spread the network. If you find a good counselor, you know, and guys are referring that counselor because they're like, this is a good one. You know, I got a really, really good connection. They're like liquid gold, you know, you pass those on. And so if you know that somebody, you've got a chance with somebody who might consider going and talking to a professional, I would be doing, you know, if you're up for it, doing that extra legwork and going, I just want to have a chat with a few counselors just to try and get a good referral before I send them, rather than taking the risk that they'll go into the big world of counseling and potentially get somebody that has them go, yeah, tried that, never again. And the lost cause piece, I think that I just try and use real stories. Men that I've met, you know, a guy called Danny in Ireland, he's an incredible human being. You know, he had the roughest childhood. He 5 prisons he's been in, 20 years of alcoholism, and he's a guy that now can sit there, hold his emotion, shed tears, talk about his life. You know, he's off the alcohol, he's renounced the violence, you sit in front of him and you can barely believe the stories that he tells you about his previous life. And I think when you see those examples, you realize nobody's a lost cause. Nobody is. You know, change is possible for everybody. We just need the right support networks around us, and we need to have the intention and the motivation for it.
And just something Tom said that I picked up on, which I just thought was so on the money again, was about men's need sometimes to speak to people they don't know, especially mm-hmm. those big, tough, gnarly dudes that we mentioned before. And there was, again, a guy that came on our walk, and he drove down from, we were on a walk in Bristol, and he drove around from Birmingham. Now, it's about 100 miles-ish, which I appreciate to Elder and Tom isn't a big distance, but over in England, that's a hell of a journey. So, and he drove down, and when he was talking to me, I said, what made you come down? He goes, honestly, he said, I could say what I like to you, and if I don't want to see you again, I never have to. Mm. And it took me back at the time, but he was on the money, and thankfully he did come back. But that was why he came. He drove that distance. He took that time to drive because it allowed him to speak to someone he had no connection to geographically or personally.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I just want to share that in the chat, people are really appreciating your work and what you do. So, yeah. I would just echoing what they're saying. We're already done with the time. So anything that you would like to add in one sentence that we haven't discussed today, if you could ask anything, you know, add anything you want to, up to you.
I would say encourage the men in your life. I'm going to say men because we're on a men's panel, but this is for people, period. Encourage the men in your life to tell somebody they love them.
We have a sort of strap line within Dudes and Dogs that it's not just okay to talk, it's vitally important.
Mine would be, if we want a different model of masculinity, then we need to exemplify it. So have the courage to pioneer and exemplify a different way so that hopefully boys and men around you have a new model.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Rob, Eldra, and Tom, for your time and for sharing what you do. Sarah has been sharing all your websites or where we can find you. And yeah, again, thank you very much for your time, for sharing, and for helping us as well. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Thank you.